From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of January, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, will join us to discuss the crop insurance decisions farmers will make in the month of March. And then we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and hear all about the price of soybean and renewable diesel from Dan O'Brien at K-State University Extension, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $6.20. It was down a penny. The May contract at 6.18 and a half, up one. And December at 5.69 and three quarters, 2 and a quarter higher. Bean futures, soybean contract, March at $14.07 and a quarter, up 4 and a quarter. The May at 14.16, up 5 and 11 cents higher. In the November at $13.18 and a half. Bean meal $1.90 lower. The bean oil up 54 cents. Soft red winter wheat 17 and a half higher. The hard red up 16 and a half. And live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at $140.10. That was 2.5 cents higher. Feeders were down $1.40, and lean hogs were up $1.92 and a half on this Tuesday. Wayne Nelson is out of the office today. John Hester, however, is here from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Hi, John. Thanks for filling in today.
Hi, Todd. Hope you're staying warm over there.
I'm trying. It's cold, and it's going to be really cold tonight. We'll hear more about that when we get to the weather forecast a little later. I'm wondering about the futures markets. Today's trade was interesting in the outside markets, particularly, I think, about 900 points, the change in the Dow, at least the range in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It had a big range yesterday. Does it make much of a difference?
I think, no, percentage-wise, it's not a big difference at all. I think some of the traders are a little skeptical and are a little scared, and they're probably leaving the stock market and going to equities now, going to the grain market futures.
Well, that was my next question. Can you tell me about that money flow and what does it mean? Usually, are they buyers rather than sellers in futures in that case?
Probably more likely buyers. You know, of course, them guys that are trading big chunks are just trying to make money. So they think the grain market, you know, they are thinking that South America's weather is still not very good, and it's better than it was, but they still think there's going to be losses down there. And you know, they're pretty much convinced that the crop's not going to be as big, so they all think that beans have got a good shot at going to $7 and corn probably $14.75. So they're jumping in and trying to pick up some extra money on the in the grain markets right now and leaving the stock market for a while.
And wheat had a good day. Is that part and parcel of the Russian-Ukraine issue and the idea that some of the ports that service the Black Grain or Black Sea might not be able to move grain as easily in the future?
I think so. I think the wheat market is probably 75% based on the Ukraine and the Russia situation now, and I don't think the weather out west in the United States has been very good on the wheat crop yet. So they think they've been damaged there.
Yeah, anything that producers, farmers in the Midwest ought to be thinking about at this time?
I think, personally, anytime you can, if it ever gets up where you can get $6 for corn off the combine, I think you got to take a little there. I think 13 to 13 and a quarter off the combine in beans, you got to sell a little, and you don't sell it all. You just sell enough to put a floor in it, and if it goes up a dollar from there, you're still happy. You got plenty of grain left to sell.
Hey, thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you. Stay warm.
You too. That's John Hester. He is with L&M Commodities. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnittke now joins us to talk about an article he's penned for the FarmDoc Daily website. Find it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the title, Crop Insurance Decisions in 2022. It's that time of year annually where farmers take up the crop insurance decision and try to discover what they ought to do this year that might be different than last. More often than not, Gary, there's not much difference, but the economics change from one year to the next. What do you see different this year?
What we see different this year is obviously much higher cost. So we're looking at $100 more per acre in cost for corn, probably about the same amount for soybeans, a little bit less. So even though we're probably looking at pretty high projected prices, if you're looking at where those future prices are trading now, $5.50 projected price for corn, $13 for soybeans are relatively high, but our costs are much higher. So even an 85% coverage level in most central Illinois situations is still not going to guarantee a profit. We will have losses even at that high coverage level.
What do you have in the way of suggestions for producers?
You know, I would just keep at the high coverage levels that they traditionally have been purchasing at. You know, 93% of corn acres are insured with RP, and most of those 93% are insured at the 75, 80, and 85% coverage levels. And in central Illinois, that's primarily 80 to 85%. So stay there. That seems to be a good place to be. We had about 10% of the acres last year used SCO, used in combination with RP. That's a good alternative, but I wouldn't lower my coverage level too much, keeping it at 85 and 80. And last year, we actually had 7% of those acres also insured with ECO. And so all of those things are option, but I would start with a baseline of, you know, 80, 85% RP in central Illinois.
There's a new PACE endorsement for a wide range of counties across a large part of the Corn Belt. It is a pilot program trying to help producers that are split applying or applying anhydrous or other forms of nitrogen after corn has been planted. Is it worth using?
Yeah, if you split apply nitrogen, you can state what percentage of nitrogen you apply post-plant. Then based on that, there will be a per acre payment. That per acre payment will happen when you are not able to apply nitrogen after planting. And so there's no yields involved in calculation. It is simply a fact like you can't post-apply nitrogen, you get this payment. In that sense, it's like hail insurance. You know, you buy it for the case of hail. And you know, if you're concerned about not applying, being able to apply nitrogen, this is a good alternative. It depends on your coverage level. It's somewhere between $3 and $5 per acre. And in most cases, it will pay something like $80 to $120 per payment if you're not able to apply. All those details depend on choices that the farmer makes, and that's something that needs to be talked through with a crop insurance agent.
And you've written about the PACE endorsement. It's also at the FarmDoc Daily website. Thank you for talking with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. You can find more from him on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday, let's check in with Dan O'Brien from K-State University Extension. He's an agricultural economist there and traveling across the state. I think you're in Beloit, Kansas today. Where is that and what are you doing?
That's in the north central part of Kansas. I'm talking about soybean market outlook today. And I may be talking about soybean market outlook, but I'll end up talking about soybean cost of production. That's where people's questions are taking them. And really, when we look at the forward contract bids that are available, you know, so much does depend on on whether the forward contract opportunities are above break-even costs or not. You know, 2 years ago, we for the state of Kansas, we had a break-even cost according to our Kansas farm records of about 1060, and now we're projecting something certainly higher than that, 1150 to 12. It just depends. Of course, for corn, we're showing more of the impact of fertilizer, particularly nitrogen fertilizer, than we are for soybeans. But there's been inflation across the board and all these crop inputs, so there's more to the story of farm income expectations for this year than just high selling prices. We also have the high input costs.
Yeah. So are you telling them that they need to look at current pricing and think about marketing some new crop soybeans in that case?
It's a possibility. What's really interesting in Kansas over the last 5 years, we've tended to see our market highs come earlier than we had in the previous 5 and 10 years. You know, in the past, we look at seasonality in this state, and gosh, you know, March, April, pardon me, May, June, July was the high, or maybe early August. But here in the last five, that shifted a lot earlier. And I think it's because of the way that the South American crops have been interacting with U.S. crops. So actually, some of our highs in the last 5 years have been coming in January, and particularly February. And what's that dealing with? That's dealing with uncertainty out of South America. So really kind of a sea change in what we're in, I guess, the pattern of prices and what we need to be aware of if we're going to make profitable marketing choices for soybeans in the state.
You were kind enough to send me the PowerPoint presentation you're making today there in Beloit. You lay out in it three scenarios. Can you tell me about the pricing outlook for soybeans under each of them?
Yes, you know, about a 25% opportunity of likelihood of lower prices for soybeans, and those would be more along the lines of instead of the 1260 that the USDA is projecting, some considerably lower than that, say 1150, 1175, $12, something along those lines, and we put a 25% probability on that. But you know, the news even today that we've got, Todd, with regard to worries about what could happen between U.S. and China and Taiwan and the possibility of disruption of shipments, all that comes into play. And maybe I need to be put a higher proportion, higher percentage on the possibility of lower prices. But assuming that doesn't happen, and we hope it doesn't, then you're looking at prices that would be at or above, at least as I'm thinking right now, at or above what USDA's projection was of about, now they're projecting about 1260 or so, and we're looking at 1275, 1280, something like that. You're looking at probably, you're wrestling with the question of what soybean production acreage will be this year and how much damage is going to come out has been had to the crop in South America already. So what the USDA is projecting for this current marketing year, 1260 would be about what we'd expect, or if not even higher going on into next year. And then there's the 25% probability, very likely, of prices being as much as a dollar higher. If the dry conditions in South America persist, and if we have any production problems in the U.S., then it won't be. You would think it wouldn't be $12.60 a bushel. We'd be looking at. We'd be looking at something tangibly, sharply higher. And again, you could add a dollar to that, and without even blinking, and within the last day or so, we've seen soybean futures on the lead contract. It's over $14 again, and. We're not showing any compunction or any hesitancy to go to high levels of prices to ration current supplies, and depending on what we get this year, during the calendar year of 2022, I don't think there'd be any hesitancy to go up there again, basically in an effort to ration whatever limited supplies we'd have in that high price scenario.
Before we move into the ag energies, because I do want to ask you about renewable diesel and what your thoughts are on it, because you're out with farmers in the north central part of the state of Kansas today, that's a primary region for soybean and corn production both now. Are they shifting acreage one way or the other?
I think this year their main focus will be on having whether they have enough nitrogen fertilizer or not to put in corn, and if and their soybeans and grain sorghum. And in honesty, this is a pretty strong corn and grain sorghum area, probably the strongest grain sorghum area in the state, but still it's kind of a balance between the two. They're growing those two, and then also in rotation growing soybeans as well. So I think their main concern this year has been, and probably will continue to be, what again the I guess the kind of the forced upon them rationing actions of fertilizer at these high prices, and what that leaves them left then to deal with for non-feed grain crops. And then at that stage, then you're probably looking at an increase in soybeans. And, you know, what's going to happen nationally for soybeans is really an open question. We've seen forecasts very, very readily talking about as much as 3 or so million acres of soybeans being planted. But then here in just recent days, we see more modest increases in soybeans and people doing what they can to still plant corn. So I think we'll no doubt here in this part of the world have an economic incentive to plant more soybeans just because of the high prices that we have here for nitrogen fertilizer. And again, Todd, I know that those prices are just as high, if not higher, back in your part of the world.
And then finally, I know you discussed renewable diesel today or are going to. Can you tell me a little bit about it and how you see that developing?
Yes. I think that a fact that strikes me is that this comes from my good colleague, Frayne Olson, at North Dakota State University, it indicated that if we took all the soybean oil that we produce, that we're planning to produce this year, turned it all into renewable diesel, we still wouldn't meet the potential demand coming out of just the state of California for this. So in the short run, there's almost a scary to forecast growth that's likely to happen in the production of renewable diesel. And we see the plants being built. And so it's not just a whimsical idea. The plant, there are investments being made to do that. So in the short run, we're driven by California and a few other states. I think Washington, Oregon have similar, but not quite as strong a law of policies as California is. Apparently New York is considering something along those lines. It sounds like the real long-term benefit, though, of this is probably with jet fuel, as the jet fuel carriers could buy renewable diesel, again, properly refined, of course, to meet their needs, then that this could provide them a means to meet their carbon footprint offset needs. And really, in the short run, we're looking at California. In the long run, I would not be surprised if it's jet fuel that will drive jet fuel demand for renewable diesel that could be the real driving factor. And last issue to say to talk on is the idea that if we have such a strong demand for soybeans to be processed into soybean oil on the one hand, and the co-product kind of incidentally would be DDGs, then that has the potential to change what type of soybean products we export out of the United States. Instead of such strong soybean, you know, raw soybean exports, perhaps we shift over more so to DDGs, and then that would impact the countries that are right now preferring to receive raw soybeans and process it themselves. So what an interesting conundrum, Todd. Just a lot of factors that and moves and counter moves that would happen with not just soybeans, but also other oil producing commodities as they might step in and try to pick up the slack for human consumption oils. So it's just lots of angles to look at and things to consider as you look at the renewable diesel impact.
Dan, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us, taking his time out of your day there in Beloit today. I appreciate that a lot.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Mm-hmm. That's Dan O'Brien. He is with Kansas State University Extension. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you can just click and play our daily ag programming, The Closing Market Report and Commodity Week 2. You'll find both of those as a podcast, along with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast under the Podcast tab. Check it all out at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Now up next, Don Day is traveling today. He's a meteorologist at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, but he left us this weather forecast.
Winter will continue to have a very icy grip on the central and eastern areas of the United States through the upcoming weekend, while precipitation across the Midwest and the Corn Belt really isn't going to amount to much. The severe cold will continue, especially across Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, the eastern parts of the Dakotas, but right into the central areas of the Corn Belt as well. We see some moisture in the winter wheat areas of the far western high plains. In fact, parts of eastern Colorado, western Kansas, the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles gonna pick up some light to moderate snowfall here early in the week. And while it's not a lot of precipitation, it's more than they've seen in a while, and that'll be good news for those areas. The headlines weather-wise this weekend will be the cold in the central and the east and probably another significant East Coast snowstorm, especially in the northeastern areas of the United States, and the southeast United States could be looking at freezing conditions. In fact, we're expecting temperatures by Sunday morning in the deep southeast into the low to mid-20s across all of the southeastern United States, all the way to the Gulf Coast of the Florida Panhandle and the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. We're going to see very, very cold January temperatures. Central Florida could be in the middle to upper 20s by Sunday morning. Now, the cold will ease. Temperatures are going to be moderating early to mid next week in the Midwest and the Corn Belt. Late this weekend and for the first half of next week, we'll see a moderation in temperatures, which will give some relief from the severe cold.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us each and every Tuesday here on the Closing Market Report. He mentioned that cold weather. It's coming into our part of the world, too. And Andrew Pritchard, who's the senior meteorologist at Nutrien Ag Solutions and helps out with the WILL, the local weather forecast here, sent us this weather special about tonight's cold conditions across the region and what we can expect in our part of the world.
A wind chill advisory goes into effect at 8 p.m. tonight, effective until 9 a.m. Wednesday morning. On the heels of yesterday's snow flurries, another round of bitterly cold Arctic air has spilled into the Midwest. Overnight low temperatures will fall to around 0 degrees with a northwest wind at 10 to 15 miles per hour, pulling wind chill temperatures into the minus 5 to minus 15 degree range on Wednesday morning. High temperatures will top out in the teens on Wednesday afternoon before rebounding into the 30s on Thursday.
So bundle up. It's going to be a cold winter's night across the whole of the Corn Belt. Thank you for listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.